Federal leaders like you know that modernizing IT requires updated technology and a culture shift. Stop reacting to change and start leading transformation. Visit BoozAllen.com/Federal News Radio.
The federal government funds scientific research to the tune of billions of dollars a year. Once in a while, researchers commit scientific fraud. Some celebrated recent cases show how policing research has spread. The job used to be done pretty much by a single office in Health and Human Services, but no more. Tom Temin spoke with senior counsel Tory Young and Michael Tutor, the partner at the law firm Foley and Lardner.
Let's start with the basic question. Do you think that scientific fraud that is going on, and it's also sponsored by the federal government, is on the rise, or do we really know?
I don't think we really know. We're certainly seeing more activity in terms of policing, and there's no question that scientists are under increasing pressure to publish or perish, as they used to say. And there are broad swings in federal funding that we see between administrations and even within administrations. But I think empirically it's hard to know whether there's more fraud. I think there is more reporting of it and larger resolutions and concerns.
And when it comes to scientific research, when you say reporting of it, that's a difficult thing to find out, I think, because only the scientists know whether data is being generated or faked and that kind of thing. So how do these things come to light in the first place as a rule? Tory?
I can start with that. So there's a number of ways which they come up. You know, sometimes it's through internal channels and someone reports to the institution, like a postdoc that is feeling pressure to do something, or someone who's not able to repeat an experiment in the way that they know that they should be able to based off of published findings. And there's also some kind of whistleblower forms. We have the anonymous Claire Francis, which has been going around sending institutions letters and reports saying you might want to look into certain journal articles or publications. So there's a number of different channels that things arise, but it is still, I think, very difficult to suss out.
And during the Obama administration, several big scientific gambits were launched, these million-person research projects for Health and Human Services, the national, I guess they'd call it almost an acceleration to cure cancer, big, widely publicized and highly visible research efforts on big-time problems. Could this also be driving people to maybe cut corners a little bit?
Yeah, I think that, again, it's harder to say. If anything, I guess the real problem that we see is when there is a wide spike in increased federal funding and then decreased federal funding. And, of course, we've seen that across administrations and in different projects. Needless to say, science is a long-term enterprise. And one of the problems is as money dries up, the researchers, just let's use the Obama administration, these big projects, they staff up for, you know, obvious reasons. There's money in brain research, for example. So researchers tend to move in the direction of funding. Then if a program is cut, suddenly you've got a case of musical chairs. And I think it's that situation which perhaps causes some researchers to cut corners or to do things that they know are inconsistent with the basic fundamentals of science.
We're speaking with Michael Tutor, who's a partner, and Tory Young is senior counsel at the law firm of Foley and Lardner. And so you have written here that the Office of Research Integrity at the Department of Health and Human Services for a long time was the primary locus of investigations of scientific fraud and misconduct. But that's expanded to other parts of government. What do you see going on?
The Public Health Service-funded research is under the jurisdiction of the Office of Research Integrity at the Department of HHS, and they have jurisdiction over misconduct. And so they're focused on what they define as misconduct, but they don't conduct investigations of individuals or institutions. Rather, the regulations, you know, require the institutions that receive the funding to go and conduct the research misconduct proceedings, then ultimately ORI can make a determination regarding misconduct and may take different administrative actions such as corrections or retractions or recommending suspension or debarment of the individual. But what we've been seeing is kind of the addition of other agencies, you know, like the Department of Justice, the OIG, NIH, the other funding agencies getting involved, because then you're looking at the authority to recover the federal funds themselves.
And you make a distinction between research misconduct versus fraud. And there's a way, I guess, you can tell the difference, and that's of interest to the government, I guess, mainly on the fraud side, because it wants its money back.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, the distinction is one that, only a lawyer could love. But, from a research misconduct perspective, what the ORI is really looking at is there bad science out there? Has there been falsification of results? Has there been fabrication of results? Has there been plagiarism? Though that's the definition that you find in Part 93 covering this. But fraud and falsity in terms of claims made to the government for money falls within really the Office of Inspector General and the Department of Justice under the False Claims Act. And further, we have the issue of independent whistleblowers under the False Claims Act learning about potential fraud on the government and bringing their own cases as bounty hunters purportedly on behalf of the government. And as Tori said, the ORI has a very specific goal, which is to root out the scientific misconduct, but it does so in a delegated fashion. It actually looks to the institution to do that work. Meanwhile, the Department of Justice has its own, obviously, its own investigative ability. Whistleblowers can effectively compel the Justice Department to look into a matter. And then what we've seen is that the agencies themselves, different pieces of, for example, HHS, are taking a more aggressive approach in seeking to have monies recovered, even as the scientific misconduct process is sort of slowly working its way through the institution and ultimately up to ORI. And our concern, among the concerns that we have, is the fact that the timing of those events can move at a very different pace and inconsistent with one another.
And so that means, I mean, what's the implication of that then?
Institutions are kind of having to handle dual tracks at the same time. So they, and with different obligations regarding confidentiality and maintaining the process that ORI has delegated to the Institution for Research Misconduct, while also making decisions regarding working with other agencies, potential self-disclosures, stopping taking federal funds, some very big and difficult decisions.
And I wonder if the key TAM effect has caused more whistleblowers to come forward. I mean, there's been some very, very big key TAM settlements in contract disputes in the commercial side of government. Has that also spilled over into the scientific research part?
Without question. I think that is one of the fundamental changes that we've seen. Speaking as somebody who's been doing false claims work for 25 years, a fundamental change that has occurred is that it used to be that whistleblowers, relators as they're called under the law, their goal was to get the government interested in the case, have the government intervene and take over the case and do the hard work. The bounty hunter ultimately received a percentage of what the government had done. But the fundamental issue for the whistleblower was to get the government to do to take over the case and run with it. In the last 25 years, what we've seen in all aspects of the QI-TAM world, a well-funded and sophisticated plaintiff's bar has developed, and they're prepared to take these cases forward even if the government doesn't ultimately intervene. They always prefer to have the government intervene because, again, then the government does the work. They get some amount of the spoils. But if they have to handle the case, they're prepared to do it on a contingency fee case basis and receive, in fact, a larger percentage of the outcome. So I think that effect is emboldening whistleblowers to bring more cases of alleged scientific fraud, which might be percolating their way through the ORI process as a research misconduct matter. And as Tori indicates, that research and misconduct matter, that may take years And it's all supposed to be done confidentially. That's what the regulations provide. Meanwhile, the institution is faced with a QI-TAM case or a government investigation, which may not be confidential in the sense that there are subpoenas out there, there's investigations going on, and trying to figure out how to balance those goals, which are fundamental to the two processes, really puts the institutions in a bind.
So in other words, there could be a celebrated and named QI-TAM case and money going out, and yet the actual case that was traditionally done by HHS on the science itself could be take years and years to wind through, but it's no longer confidential, essentially.
That's exactly right. And we've had such cases, and in fact, the scientists have, in at least one case, brought suit alleging that confidentiality had been breached. I should add that under the regulations, the confidentiality is only to the extent possible. That's the regulation actually says that. But needless to say, the scientist's career can be made or broken by these kinds of allegations. And further, and I think this is really the nub of what we found to be interesting and challenging, as the False Claims Act case blossoms, the institution has to decide, do we continue to take the federal money under our grant application? Because every application, every claim that they make is now potentially a false claim for which they could be liable for damages, penalties, trebling of the damages, and attorney's fees. And meanwhile, they're still trying to do their job as delegated by ORI to have a fair scientific misconduct process for the science.
Do you recommend any reforms to the whole complex of processes, I guess, surrounding this whole issue?
I mean, I think coordination among the agencies is something that we've struggled with. And I think if there was kind of a more concise and coordinated process, that would certainly help. I mean, having to take reasonable steps to ensure an impartial and unbiased investigation is ongoing while the institution also potentially faced False Claims Act liability and is coordinating with two or three other agencies doesn't seem to make a lot of sense right now.